saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her.
Welcome to Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven.
As hey, always, the incomparable Mimi Steven. Did you see that Zach Bagans touched Annabelle?
I did, and I was horrified.
Did you see that?
I thought that was so disrespectful, and I just wanted to pop him.
He's literally, like, posing and touching the doll so that it would be, like, this media sensation. I was like, dude... You's gonna die.
I think that that's just so rude. Happen. Just so rude. Yeah. And he, did come back and apologize and he shouldn't have done that. But you know what? Too little, too late. But, he knows better.
But first and foremost, who opened the case for him?
That's true.
So, it's in Lorraine Warren's occult museum. Who has a key to that case? Just Lorraine Warren. So why would Lorraine Warren open the case... So that Zach Bagans could put his grubby hands all over Annabelle. Why?
I didn't think about it before. But I still think it's disgusting that he did that.
It's despicable.
And I mean, shame on him.
It's not asking Robert the doll if you can take his picture before you actually take his picture.
Right.
It's just what you do. You know, I mean, whether or not you believe that these objects hold some power or whatever, that doesn't really...
Still need to be respectful.
Yeah. And I mean, the other part of it was, like, believing that these objects hold some sort of power or have some sort of energy inside of them. He's supposed to believe in that shit.
Right. Because he's experienced it.
Right. So he's a follower of that path. So he knows all about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go into an occult museum and you start putting your hands over something that supposedly kill people?
Right.
What? Why? You know, like, money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really the only reason. But the thing that got me was, who opened the case, and why did they open the case?
Well, now that I think about it, they opened it so that they could get some sort of sensationalism from that, and hopefully people will come by more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a shame.
But that, to me, as far as Lorraine Warren is concerned... That, to me, kind of verifies a lot of the feelings that I have about, like, the Amityville Horror and The Haunting in Connecticut.
Right.
Because, you know, she and her husband were always adamant that they never insisted that the press come in. You know, we just wanted to raise awareness because we wanted to, let the clergy know that this was something that was wrong and something that we needed their help with.
Right.
And they wouldn't believe us unless we went public. So it was like this whole thing. But now, you're opening the box that you keep the haunted doll in.
Right.
So that this guy can put his hands all over it. And, I mean, the only reason why you do that is, like you said, for monetary gain.
Yeah.
Or sensationalism. Or... You know, just to be like, oh, you know, I'm still here.
It just leaves such a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it really does.
Because I kind of, you know, I want to believe that they're genuine people.
Yeah.
Not charlatans, you know.
Yeah.
And I have not liked Zach's show for a very long time just because I feel he's so disrespectful.
I don't know. I mean, I've tried to sit down and watch it a couple of times, but I just can't.
No.
I can't get into it. I don't know. Somebody who wears that much Ed Hardy at one time, I just, it's too distracting. I just
can't.
Well,
I happen to like Ed Hardy.
I can't do it. Yeah, but except, like, he has, like, Ed Hardy socks and Ed Hardy underwear. Like, I am sure. Because he's like Ed Hardy from top to bottom.
Well, I used to wear Ed Hardy shoes.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're comfortable shoes, but like, you know, dude, you don't need to, like, you're going overboard here. Like, we understand that you make decent money and maybe you can afford all that crap, but please.
Well, I just think he's a scuzz bucket.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't watch his show anymore.
I feel like the whole purpose of that show is to record noises that they're making themselves.
I think so, too.
To say, okay, yeah, we heard this big bang, or we heard this voice, or whatever, and it's like, you have, like, 12 people with you.
Like, I would...
like, your camera guy is like, oh, shit, drop my burrito. That's okay, it could be a ghost sound!
He does get to go to some really neat places that I would love to go, but without him.
He does, yeah.
Just because of his quote-unquote name. But, yeah, just without him.
No, that's okay, Mr. Baggins. You can stay here. We'll just go. Yeah. I don't know. So that was, it was just kind of something that I wanted to talk a little bit about on the podcast, because I know that we've spoken about Annabelle, and I know that we personally have great respect for these objects that are supposedly haunted or contain some power. So, you know, I just feel like it's important, you know, we should respect these things.
And I really want to believe that Lorraine does have...
Mm-hmm. Good intentions.
A gift, you know, that she can share with the world. And I do kind of understand that, you know, she does need to live and she needs to be able to make some money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if that's what she has available to her, I don't necessarily condemn her for that.
Yeah.
But at the same time... You don't want it to be over-sensationalized, you know, so that she can earn her money. You want it to be natural.
The minute you start doing that, you start to, you start to throw shade against, like, your profession and the profession of, you know, I would say probably millions of people who go out there every day or every night or whatever and look for ghosts and try to find answers.
Right.
To what is on the other side? Is there another side? You know, what is going on here? Why is this place haunted? Why is this object haunted? And not only that, but you're casting doubt.
And that's the problem, not fair. Is the casting doubt.
Yeah, that's not fair. Because I have had experiences myself, and I entirely believe that there is something else. You know, there is some sort of waiting room. Or something that it's almost like, this is kind of bad.
Beetlejuice?
Like, Beetlejuice, where he's sitting there with a super long number, and then he changes it with the guy with the shrunken head, and then the head shrinker shrinks his head. Yeah, like, I don't know, I just picture us, like, because so many of us have unfinished business, so many of us, like, have doubts about what's there. I think if you're human, then naturally you should have doubts. Like, you're an animal that is designed to question. By something, somewhere, you were designed to question. So if you don't question, you're not doing your job. As a human being.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. Last night I was watching, it's either Disney or Pixar movie, Ants. And, you know, ants really don't think about it. They do what they're told, what they're supposed to do. And, you know, just you saying that just... I just thought I'd share that. For some reason, I had a reason, but it went out of my head. My mind is so muddled this week. It's just terrible.
I think it has something to do with the weather. We're just, like, all tired and, like, and, yeah, we just don't. I don't have any patience for anything. Like,
I have
zero fucks to give. I just have zero fucks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, for example, I really want the cross-stitch pattern that says, behold the field in which I grow my fucks and see that it is barren. Because, motherfucker, it's barren. Like, there's not a single fuck in that field. You know, and it's gotta be, like, seasonal affective disorder or something.
Oh my gosh.
We're losing Mimi. Yeah, so I'm just, you know, peace out. I'm peace out in everything recently.
No, it is. It's, you know, I know so many people who feel the same way. Just 2017 has been really a hard year.
It's been rough for a lot of people.
And, you know, I was, for Thanksgiving, in my, you know, grand talk about, you know, what I'm thankful for and grateful for and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Was that 2017 is coming to an end, and I am very much looking forward to 2018 because it has to be a good year.
Yeah, something's got to
I can't take another year like this year.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, I don't think I could. I feel like it'd be a little bit too much for me. No, I think for me at least, I think it has something to do with the fact that the holidays are fast approaching,
mm-hmm.
and all my family is in Newfoundland. Oh. So trying to make new traditions here has been very hard for me, because in Newfoundland, there's like a whole culture around Christmas. Like, mm-hmm. it's a big deal. And here it's like, you know, America is such a melting pot that everything has just kind of slipped together. And so now Christmas here is like, get a Christmas tree on fucking Thanksgiving so that it's, you know, brown by Christmas.
Right.
You know, go to your family's house or whatever in November for turkey dinner and then fucking eat it again for Christmas. Like, too close together. Mm-hmm. October is a much better month for Thanksgiving. In my personal opinion. Where's my Canadian peeps at? I know you're with me
on that. So, do you have Thanksgiving?
We don't do the Canadian Thanksgiving here. We don't do it in October. We do the American Thanksgiving.
No, but I mean in Canada. That's what I meant.
Do we have Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I forget when it is in October, but it's in October.
And do you call it Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? It's really funny, because you're not the first person to ask me that.
Well, when I always said it was an American-only tradition.
I don't know.
So.
Dude, everybody's thankful for their turkey and shit.
And I had quotes in the air, by the way, people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's totally a Canadian thing.
So, what are your traditions?
You guys have Veterans Day, and we have November 11th, which is Remembrance Day.
Okay.
So it's the same thing. It's just, you know,
okay,
called something different. But Thanksgiving is Thanksgiving, and Christmas is Christmas. And,
so, you know, what are some of your traditions that you kind of miss?
My grandmother, she's not so much anymore, but she used to be a big cook during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she would get a duck and a roast of beef and a whole turkey that was, like, 30 pounds that she would get deboned. And everybody would come to the house. It would be, like, 18 or 20 people around a huge table. And, like, people, like, had to sit on the sofas and whatever. And even the furniture, like, it was Queen Anne style with the feet.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And just, like, even the memory of sitting in that room with the furniture. I don't know. It's just, like, it's not the same.
So I have a question on that turkey, though.
Oh, boy.
The
deboned-ness of it? The
deboned-ness of it. Because my husband is doing, he's trying something new tomorrow, because we have my nephew and niece coming over.
Oh, okay.
But, well, my nephew and niece-in-law, I guess you'd
Niece-in-law, okay.
He's taking a turkey, and it's called scotch something, where you take the backbone out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I never heard of it before.
Yeah, deboning is they take the legs, the bones for the legs out. They take
before you cook it?
Yep. They take the rib cage and the breastbone and all that stuff out. And then I think they actually take the wings off.
Okay.
And you get those separately. But then they truss it up.
Okay.
So that it's like round.
Yeah.
You know? And then you take that and you roast it.
Okay. Well, it would take less time,
but it's really, yeah, well, and it's awesome because you just slice the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
Just the whole thing.
Nice.
And then you're like, okay, do-do-do-do-do-do, here you go, everybody have turkey. And it's so much easier than, like, ripping the legs off and whatever.
So if I remember, I'll let you know how is scotch, whatever it is.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know. Because I'd be interested to know how that goes. I know that in this country, sometimes you guys deep fry turkeys. I've never actually had a deep
fry. Bill has tried it once, and it came out like a burned marshmallow. So we have not done that again. I won't let him do that again. But he doesn't use the oil anymore. He uses an infrared fryer for the chickens, and it's so good.
Nice.
Really
good. An infrared fryer.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We'll have to have you come over for chicken. Although I want him to try a roast. I want to do a roast in there. We did do tenderloin once, but I felt like it ruined the meat because tenderloin is such a good piece of meat.
Yeah. So tender and
So we'll try a roast though.
Yeah.
I think that'll be cool.
You guys will probably hear lots of lip smacking throughout this episode because for some fucking reason I do it all the time. But I'm purposely doing it now because tenderloin is...
I know. It's my favorite.
So good. my wife does a coffee crusted pork tenderloin.
Oh, really?
It is delicious.
Ooh.
Oh, it's so good. She does like light ground coffee and then she mixes like cayenne pepper.
Oh.
In with it, and, like, red pepper flakes, so it's, like,
is it really hot and spicy, though?
No, it's not super hot and spicy, but it has, like, just enough spice, you know, so that you know it's spicy.
Okay, because I don't like a lot of...
Yeah, no, it's not.
But that sounds like bad. I want to try it, hint.
It's so good. Yeah, we'll have to set up a time for you and, Billy Boy to come over for...
Yeah, unless you guys want to come to our house.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you guys have been here, so really it's our turn to go there.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have to do that soon.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We do.
Okay.
Yeah, because I want to see all your new, like, updates and stuff, too. That you did the summer when you were lying on your kitchen counter.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, so we kind of got a little bit off topic as far as the whole Annabelle story goes.
Yes.
But in terms of haunted objects and communicating with the other side... The piece that I have this week is about the Fox sisters and the Stratford knockings.
Ooh, I've heard of the Stratford knockings.
Yeah, so it's regarding the rise of spiritualism.
Cool.
So it's very interesting. So what do you have?
So today I have Busby's chair.
Busby's chair.
We're going back over to England.
Yeah.
Well, not England, it's Yorkshire.
Okay.
Which is in England.
Yorkshire?
Yeah. So, all right, you're going first today.
Because I don't want to get fucking emails, Mimi, about Yorkshire.
Uh-oh.
It's Yorkshire.
Yorkshire. Sure.
Yeah, Yorkshire. Well, not quite like sure.
It's you sure sheer. It's not shire?
It's like sheer. Yeah.
Okay. Yorkshire. Anywho.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Anyway. All right, so I'm going first. I feel like I went first last time.
Didn't Do you want me to go last first? Time?
No, I'm trying to remember. Somebody needs to, like, start writing this shit down. We just don't.
I can go first if you want me to.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I just, you know, because you know what? I'm paranoid now. Because you told me that last season you cheated a bunch of times. And so now I'm like, Mimi's cheating. Mimi's cheating. Yeah, sure, sure.
Actually, I don't mind going first anymore. So... Well, I've warmed up to doing it.
Yeah, now you're pretty much past it. Okay, yeah, no, I don't have a problem going first. It's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine. It's fine. It's just my paranoia.
Too funny.
Okay, so as I said, my piece is about the Fox sisters and the Stratford knockings. The first half of this piece focuses solely on the Fox sisters. With a couple of little famous names dropped in there. And then the second one, the second half of the piece, deals with Eliakim Phelps, who was a congregational minister in Stratford, Connecticut in the 1850s. So it's basically his story of what happened to his family in this particular home. So, all right, let's get started with the Fox sisters, and then I'll go back and I'll delete all my fucking ums again. Jesus. So all I ever say is, people at home must be like,
what do you say? What?
You shithead.
Gotcha.
you fucker. All right. That's okay, because you know what? I'm just going to delete that section. So, haha. Too bad. Too bad, so sad.
You shouldn't. That was funny.
All right. Okay, so I entitled this piece, Knock, Knock, Knockin'. Everyone loves a good ghost story. There's something about the use of narrative to relay a spooky tale that gets the blood pumping and the fine hairs on the back of one's neck standing at attention. That was Mimi knocking. That was not a Stratford knock. Every story has its own twist, its own flavor, And the tale of the Fox sisters and the Stratford knockings have flavors all their own. Around 1850, many individuals claimed to be able to communicate with the other side. There had been a rise in spiritualism, a system of religious practice or belief that communication with the dead is possible through a medium. Supposed mediums began popping up everywhere, all claiming that they had a direct line to the afterlife. They had, like, the party line. You know, they were like, yeah, get on the party line, because we got the party line to the, all the dead people. Yeah. The cause of this rise, or rather explosion, can be traced to three sisters, Leah, Kate, and Margaret, but they were more widely known as the Fox sisters. Now, in terms of Leah, I don't know that Leah had such a huge hand in it. It really seems like Kate and Margaret were really, like, the two main, quote-unquote, performers.
Okay.
In this particular instance, because they just didn't, I don't know, I feel like Leah probably moved out of the house, like, got married and moved out of the house. And then, so it was just the two younger sisters there, and then they started to ramp everything up. But I think originally, she did start working in, you know, dabbling in this idea of being able to communicate with the other side.
Okay.
So, Kate, age 12, and Leah lived with their parents in a modest house in Hydesville, New York. Margaret was, I believe, 11 at this time. Although Hydesville no longer exists, it was located just outside of Newark, just to give you an idea. In March of 1848, the girls began to report knocking sounds. At times, it sounded like furniture being moved around. Now, the house was rumored to be haunted, but until this point in time, there was no verification of this. Like, nobody was saying, oh, yeah, well, we moved into this house, and, like, 5 years ago, somebody was murdered, and, you know, and now it's haunted, and we hear noises in the night. Like, this is the very first instance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kate would often ask the noisemaker, an entity that the girls began to call Mr. Splitfoot, a nickname for the devil, to communicate. She would snap her fingers and ask for the entity to repeat the pattern. It would. When she requested it to knock as a response, she would get it. Eventually, the girls created a code in order to communicate with Mr. Splitfoot using a series of knocks that corresponded to the letters of the alphabet. Think along the lines of Stranger Things when Joyce uses the Christmas lights to communicate with Will in the Upside Down. It's basically the same thing, only with knocks.
Okay, I haven't watched Stranger Things yet.
I knew I'd managed to fit a Stranger Things reference in here somewhere. And that was from season one, so it's not a spoiler.
Okay.
Just for you people who are, like, hardcore Stranger Things fans and are like, don't talk about it, I haven't watched it yet! Anyway. So, after some time, the entity identified itself as one Charles B. Rosna, a peddler. According to the spirit, his remains were buried in the cellar following his murder 5 years prior.
Oh.
No peddler by that name could ever be identified, but a skeleton was found buried in one of the cellar walls in 1904. A manhunt followed, and a man named Bell was eventually accused of the crime, having been the previous owner of the house, but he was never convicted of murder. Now, Bill would be ostracized from the community for the rest of his life as a suspected murderer.
Okay.
Which is super unfortunate for him.
So what did he claim? I didn't do it? I knew nothing? Or
yeah, basically he just said that he didn't do it. He, you know, when he lived in the house, he didn't have any experiences.
How long was he in the house for?
I don't know the answer to that question. I just know that he was in the house 5 years before the Foxes moved in. Yeah, interesting. It kind of goes along the lines of, like, you know, the haunting in Connecticut, where, you know, that family moved in, and activity, and then they move out, and someone else moves in, and it just stops.
Yeah.
And the excuse is, well, we cleansed the house, so now there's no activity anymore, because the house has been cleansed. But it's like, no, maybe there was no activity in the first place. Like, the Amityville Horror?
Well, isn't that how they say poltergeists work, that it's somebody living who has so much angst in them that they just kind of create these issues?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in all honesty, the some of the photos that they released when they did the investigation of the Amityville horror house, mm-hmm. They did have a picture on a landing in the home that showed a little boy in a doorway. Mm-hmm. And they said that there were no children present on the premises at that time. So the image of a little boy that's very clear in a hallway is very provocative. I mean, it right. makes you really, you know, genuinely question yourself. Like, is this actually, like, something I'm seeing? Was right. it manufactured? You know, why was it manufactured? Well, probably to make money. You know, so, I mean, you start to question yourself when you see stuff like that.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I honestly think that it was, you know, one of those situations where, like, well, we lived in the house for years and we didn't experience anything. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden these new people come in and it's like, oh, well, now we have ghosts coming out of our a-holes.
Right.
You know, basically. So during all of the excitement at home, because there were people there, like, digging up the basement and finding skeletal remains in the basement. And, you know, her neighbors were, like, searching out this Bell fella and, like, trying to figure out if he was a murderer or whatever.
Right.
So during all that, Kate and Margaret resided in nearby Rochester. Kate was living with her sister Leah because her sister had gotten married and moved out of the house. And Margaret stayed with her brother David. The strange occurrences followed them. So, they were still hearing the knocking sounds. They were still able to communicate with this peddler, Charles B. Rosno, okay. or Mr. Splitfoot, or whatever it was. They said they were still able to talk to him. Longtime friends of the Fox family, and radical Quakers, Amy and Isaac Post, invited the girls to visit them in their Rochester home and began to tell all of their radical Quaker friends about the girls and their supernatural abilities. Now, I tried to do some research on this, but what is a radical Quaker? Like, a Quaker is Amish, right?
Yeah. Okay. Quakers are generally Amish.
It's so a radical Quaker...
But I don't remember what... It just slightly different. But...
But I feel like it's a more staunch...
They would never... They would believe highly in the spiritual... But they would never seek it like that. I mean, like demons and whatever. They would believe that.
But that's if they're Quakers. These are radical Quakers. So.
But it doesn't make sense to
I
me.
I don't. Yeah. So. I don't know. I was like, radical Quakers. What is a radical Quaker? Like, a radical Quaker is somebody who, you know, has a zipper on their pants. Like, I don't.
You would.
I don't understand anything about the Amish community. And I tried to research radical Quakers, and I was like, I don't know. It's not like they're going to listen to this and be offended, so...
Wouldn't, if it's radical Quakers, wouldn't they be, like, ultra-conservative Quakers?
Well, no, I would think, like, radicals, like, people who are, like, thinking outside the box, like, doing radical shit, and, like...
Then they would no longer be Quakers, because the Quakers would excommunicate them if they knew.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Because they are very rigid.
Like, I wonder if it's like, you know, in the Amish community, like, they do all this kinds of stuff, like, behind the elders or whatever's backs.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, we go and, you know, we have parties or whatever, like, because they'll have parties in the cornfields.
Yeah.
And the other Amish don't know anything about that. And then they just put their clothes, their regular clothes back on, and they go back home.
Yeah.
You know, but they like, stash stuff places so that they can go and grab it, and, like, go to parties and then come back. Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, radical Quakers. Anyway. Longtime friends of the Fox family and radical Quakers, Amy and Isaac Post, invited the girls to visit them in their Rochester home and began to tell all of their radical Quaker friends about the girls and their supernatural abilities. Wow, it took a lot to get that out.
Yes, it did.
In the first ever public exhibition of spiritualistic practice in 1850... the sisters, Margaret and Kate, performed seances for a large audience at Corinthian Hall in Rochester. The girls asked questions of the spirits they claimed were present and received definitive answers. Onlookers were enthralled by the spectacle, and the sisters became quite popular. That was until the investigations began. So, scientists and doctors at the time believed that the sounds emanated from the girls themselves, saying that the clicking of joints were the causes of the rapping. So they would actually, like, crack their toes and, like, crack their ankles. No, not their fingers, because they would have to keep their hands on the table. But yeah, they could crack their hips. They could crack their knees, and they had the long dresses, so that's you couldn't really tell strange. What they were doing under the table. Yeah, but apparently that's what they were doing. So,
but do they know that for proof that that's what they were doing?
Yes, they do, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
But they do. So E.P. Longworthy, a physician, noted that the noises always seemed to come from under the girls' dresses and never from an outside source. So he explained that cracking toe joints, hips, and knees could produce such a sound. And in fact, the sounds that the girls were creating were so loud that they could be heard plainly throughout a large hall. There were even some people who claimed that, like, it felt like somebody was tapping them on the shoulder. Because the cracking was, like, so, like, around them everywhere. I don't know. Many more in the scientific community came forward to cast doubt upon the public seances, and in time, the crowds at the Fox Sisters events and their popularity dwindled. Margaret did attempt to return to the practice later in life due to financial need. Although she had confessed to a major newspaper that the rappings were a farce, she tried to retract her statement, but to no avail. At the time of their death, the women were penniless and were interred in paupers' graves in Brooklyn, New York.
Aww.
Kind of a sad end to a story,
that
but...
That is sad.
So this is what Margaret herself had to say about their ruse. Mrs. Underhill, my eldest sister, took Katie and me to Rochester. There it was that we discovered a new way to make the raps. My sister Katie was the first to observe that by swishing her fingers, she could produce certain noises with her knuckles and joints, and that the same effect could be made with the toes. Finding that we could make the raps with our feet, first with one foot and then with both, we practiced until we can do this easily when the room was dark. Like most perplexing things when made clear, it is astonishing how easily it is done. The rapping are simply the result of perfect control of the muscles of the leg below the knee, which govern the tendons of the foot and allow action of the toe and ankle bones that is not commonly known. Such perfect control is only possible when the child is taken at an early age and carefully and continually taught the practice of controlling the muscles, which grow stiffer in later years. This, then, is the simple explanation of the whole method of the knocks and raps. So they were trained by their eldest sister.
Mm-hmm. Oh. But yep. Still, that's not a normal thing for a body to do.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Well, and it doesn't surprise me that they would grow stiffer in later years. I mean, if you're repeatedly, right. I don't know, something tells me that would be bad. Right? That's bad for your joints?
Yeah. It's supposed to be bad for your joints.
Yeah. I feel like I read somewhere that it was a farce that, like, you can get. Because I was always told, you know, don't crack your fingers because you'll get arthritis. Right.
That's what I was told,
but
too.
But I don't know. Yeah. So, Margaret also wrote, a great many people, when they hear the rapping, imagine at once that the spirits are touching them. It's a very common delusion. Some very wealthy people came to see me some years ago when I lived in 42nd Street, and I did some rappings for them. I made the spirit rap on the chair, and one of the ladies cried out, I feel the spirit tapping me on the shoulder. Of course, it was pure imagination.
Power of suggestion.
Right? Harry Houdini was devoted to debunking spiritualist activities and had this to say about the practice of spiritualism. As to the delusion of sound, sound waves are deflected just as light waves are reflected by the intervention of a proper medium, and under certain conditions it is a difficult thing to locate their source. Stuart Cumberland, who was an English mentalist, told me that an interesting test to prove the inability of a blindfolded person to trace the sound to its source. It is exceedingly simple, merely clicking two coins over the head of the blindfolded person. So, that was what Harry Houdini had to say about it. There was actually posters that were put up. You know, Harry Houdini debunks spiritualist claims live on stage. Like, it's just like a big, you know, a big thing. And they're all painted and stuff. just very cool. I kind of wish that I could get my hands on one, like even a reprint.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really cool. I don't know where the fuck I would put it. I'd find somewhere.
There's a place in Eau Claire. It's in the downtown area, and it's like a 3-story or 4-story building full of antiques. Mm. Like super fine stuff is on the first floor, and then you go up and there's different things. But they have a record collection. They have papers of all different types. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have something there. I just maybe. Don't know what the name is.
Yeah.
But they had just amazing stuff to look through.
Well, they have a really cool antique place in downtown Milwaukee, too. I think it was, like, Antiques on First or Antiques on Second, and now it's Antiques on Pierce, because they moved. They moved to a new location. But, yeah, really cool. Like you said, they have a separate section for records. They have, like, a little cafe where you can sit down and have a cup of coffee or whatever while you're looking, because it's 4 fucking floors. And it's just back to front, like, loaded.
I'll go with you if you want to go.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love that stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. But, like, I need to go close to my birthday. Because then I can say, well, it's my birthday, so we're going to go antiquing for my birthday. And Joanne hates going because she has to walk. And she doesn't like to walk. She gets tired.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, it'd be great to go with somebody who's, like, actually into it.
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's do it.
And she's always like, yeah, wait right here. I'll wait at the end of this aisle in this chair. This postmodern chair. And, you know, if anybody wants to buy it, I'll get up, but, yeah.
Poor Joanne.
Yeah. I love her. I love her to pieces. I will always love her, but she's just so funny sometimes. All right, so the second half of my story, that kind of correlates to the first in terms of involving children doing kind of funky things, involves Elikeem Phelps, congregational minister in Stratford, Connecticut in the 1850s. He and his wife, a much younger woman who had been widowed as he had, and their blended family lived in a beautiful home. It had been built by Matthias Nickel for his daughter Eliza and her husband Captain George Dowdall in 1826.
Dowdall?
Dowdall. D-O-W-D-A-L-L.
Okay. I thought it was like D-O-U-B-T.
Yeah, no, you know, and it might be like Dowdle, or I don't know, but I say Dowdall. Anyway.
Okay.
So Dowdall worked in the China trade, and the top floor of the home had been modeled to look like the deck of a ship.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty interesting, and it was pretty cool of his father-in-law to, like, design the top level of this house for him. I was like, wow, thanks, Dad. You're cool. Awesome.
Did they show a picture?
No, I didn't find any pictures. I'm sure, no, there are probably not pictures out there, actually, because I think the house is gone now.
Oh, too bad.
Let's see here. So the top floor had been modeled to look like the deck of a ship, but when Dowdall died in China several years following the house being built, it was put up for sale. So Phelps saw the property as the perfect place for his family and purchased it, using it seasonally and living the rest of the time in Philadelphia. So, it's at this point that things begin to get a little strange. One day, the family, Phelps, his wife, the children from their previous marriages, and the 3-year-old daughter that they shared, returned from church to find the house in complete shambles. Their belongings were strewn about, clothing and trinkets lay everywhere, all the mirrors in the home had been draped in black funeral crepe. Naturally, the family was taken aback, because, like, what the hell? Who would have done this? Phelps told his family to wait in the foyer as he explored the house to ensure that nobody was hiding inside. So he's walking around. He finds nobody in the house that's not supposed to be in the house. And nothing has been taken. So all of his personal belongings, the family's personal belongings, are all accounted for. He assumes, naturally, that it's the work of vandals. Uh-huh. And so he gives the rest of the family the all clear, and they proceed about the task of cleaning up. Now, when Phelps enters the master bedroom, he finds a dress laid out on the bed, and the arms are crossed over the chest in a funeral pose. Now, this dress had belonged to his previous wife, now deceased.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. She's so happy.
Yeah. So, of course, the scene made Phelps uneasy. But he simply brushed it off as a prank. He was like, yeah, whatever, you know, kids must have done this. They didn't know whose dress it was. They just laid it out and did something funny with it. In the weeks and months that followed, there were more strange occurrences. So, books, tools for the fireplace, a potato, for some reason, a random potato would, like, appear in places. The Wandering Spud. I don't know.
That's weird.
I was like, yeah. I was like, there's a potato.
Okay. Favorite food?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they were, like, big into starches. I don't
know. Maybe.
I think that there's actually an instance, too, where, like, a potato drops from the ceiling.
Oh, weird.
They're, like, sitting at the table or something, and a potato drops from the ceiling. I don't know. Yeah. Items thought to have been under lock and key appeared in plain sight. Items would fall from their places, and windows would be smashed. At one point, Phelps sent the remainder of the family to Philadelphia to see if the activity would continue. Something tells me that he believed that it was the work of one of the children.
Okay.
Now, when the children left, when everybody else left the house and it was just him, the activity was less frequent, but it still continued.
Okay.
Or he says it still continued. So, when the whole family was back in the house, they found that the spirit, or spirits, most often communicated with 11-year-old Henry.
Oh.
He'd ask questions, and the spirits would rap out the answers. Sound familiar? Friendly spirits would help the family locate lost or misplaced items, while evil spirits would set fires and break windows.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Henry.
Mm-hmm. So, newspapers had a field day with the Phelps story. There was so much speculation as to the validity of the claims the family made, many wondered if they were simply just telling tall tales. A few news outlets stated that they believed that the wrapping and lost objects were the doing of the Phelps' wife and children. Others claimed that Phelps himself was in on the ruse. The events would start and stop according to the times that Henry spent in the house, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a dead fucking giveaway.
Yeah.
So, the sounds and the damage were largely blamed on him. Now, Phelps eventually sold the home to the publisher of the New York Sun, and the family moved away in 1852. There were no further reports of ghostly happenings or raps on the property. The house has long since been demolished, but the story lives on in spooky Connecticut history. So, yeah, I'd be interested to know what everybody else, our listeners, think of spiritualism, the practice of spiritualism, and, I mean, even the, you know, the process of going to get your cards read, or, you know, dealing with a psychic, or, you know, I mean, you know, do you believe in that stuff? Like, do you half believe in it? You know, are you, like, a staunch critic? Are you a staunch believer? Like, you know, kind of where, I'd be interested to know where the listeners fall.
Well, I think I'm like a half believer because
I'm
really interested in like getting my cards read or my palms read or something, yet I'm kind of terrified of it because you know, even the power of a suggestion can change where I'm going and it's like I think I should just stay away from it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think
But I'm fascinated with other people who go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that's part of the quote-unquote problem that I have when I go to psychics and tarot readers. Because they never find... I think I've said this before on the podcast, but they never tell me anything that's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
They can never give me any insights into anything. And I think it's because when I go in there for the experience of them telling me. And so I don't tell them anything.
Right.
And then I get to the end, and I'm like, oh, well, they didn't tell me anything. And I'm like, well, yeah, they didn't tell you anything because it's not a thing. You know, like, they needed you to give something away, and you didn't give anything away. So they had nothing to tell you.
Right.
That you just let slip. You know, because I literally, like, give one or two word answers. Like, I don't elaborate. I don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just tell them, you know, I'm here to get my cards read. You know, I have a couple of things coming up in my life that I'd be interested to know about in regards to the outcome. Can you help me? And they'll sit there and they'll read my cards and they'll tell me all about, you know, whatever. Like, oh, and your father, this one psychic told me that my father worked on the railway. And she saw some sort of accident.
Okay.
And I was like, no. I said, my father works in security, and he's never been in an accident on a railway.
Okay.
So that's not a thing. They said something about my great-grandfather, my great-grandfather died, he died like on a battlefield or something. And I was like, no, my great-grandfather worked with the forestry unit and he was actually decapitated because he fell into the saw. Like, he's buried in Inverness in Scotland.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I always say that I need to get over to Scotland to see where he's buried and take some pictures before my grandparents pass away, because my grandfather really wants to see his father's grave. Because he's never seen it.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, like, there's all these things. Like, you could say, well, I feel pressure around my neck. Well, that would be accurate.
Wow.
You know, like, I don't know.
Wow. So, my daughter, Sophie, was sitting in a cafe on the east side. Mm. And she was having, you know, just coffee with a friend of hers.
Sure.
And a woman kept staring at her. And Sophie was sort of getting creeped out by it. But then she comes over to Sophie. And she says, everything's going to be okay.
Oh.
It'll be hard for a while, but everything will be okay.
Huh.
And Sophie was like, what are you talking about? She goes, you just seem like you're having a hard time. I don't want to intrude on your coffee or anything, but
makes me wonder everything what she will was be talking
okay.
about.
And,
because she was with a friend, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they were conversing about
Sophie said they weren't talking about much. They were just talking about people. So she doesn't think that she had any connection, but she kind of needed that at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because she was under a tremendous amount of stress. And then she found out that she's a tarot reader from upstairs, the cafe.
Mm-hmm. And so she was trying to drum up some business.
Maybe. Maybe, but Sophie needed it at that moment. Mm. So Sophie wants to go back to her and get her cards read.
Yeah. See, so she did make some business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she hasn't gone yet, but she
but she has intentions. She's good intention to go and
get it done. Yeah, it was just interesting.
Yeah. Well.
So, I don't know. But for myself, I think things have to happen naturally, and I don't want to, unless it's for really good stuff, I'll be a millionaire in 5 years.
Right.
Or I'll win something. Mm-hmm. But no.
Huh.
So.
What do you got?
All right. Let's talk about Busby's chair.
Bring it on.
All right. We are, again, over the waters, back to England. We're in Yorkshire.
Yorkshire.
Very difficult to say. Okay. So, late 1600s, in Kirby Whisk, a small English town in North Yorkshire, England, a man named Daniel Audi bought a farm. He named it, I can read from my writing, Donnelly Hall. Mm. Okay. Now, Audi was not the most honest of men. He was a counterfeiter. After buying the farm, he built a secret room under the house with an almost impregnable set of locks, so no one could witness what he was up to.
Oh. Dun, dun, dun!
So eventually, Audi married, and he had a daughter named Elizabeth. So Elizabeth married a man by the name of Thomas Busby, a man born and raised in Kirby Whisk, a man just as dishonest as her father, a man who soon became her father's partner in the counterfeiting operation, and a man who was also a drunk. Elizabeth and Busby lived above the local inn, a place Busby often visited. Audi, being very concerned for his daughter's safety, went to bring her home. Before she would leave with Audi, she insisted she needed to see Busby. She wasn't going to go anywhere without seeing him first. So Busby arrives home, surprise, surprise, drunk.
Yep, right.
Audi and Busby begin arguing. Audie's arguing about how Busby doesn't take care of his daughter and how crappy a person he is. And Audie wants to take his daughter away from Busby. Busby was arguing about something completely different.
Hmm.
Busby was really upset that he was sitting in his chair.
Oh.
That Audie was sitting in his chair.
Hmm.
So, okay, now this chair is just a brown, old, creaky, just a standard chair, right? So, after the argument, Audie went home, unfortunately without Elizabeth. She refused to leave her husband. But Busby was still angry, still drunk, and getting more drunk, and he decided to walk 3 miles to Audie's home, which is Donnelly Hall. He enters Audie's home. He picks up a hammer, and he beats the crap out of Audie till he's dead as pulp, right?
That must have been a really comfy chair.
Yeah, really comfy chair.
I mean, you know, I mean, I get, like, everybody has their favorite chair.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it's probably, you know, 100 years old and it's full of farts, but it's your favorite chair.
After, you know, Audie's dead, he takes his body, Busby takes his body, and he lays it out in the woods, and he leaves, and he lets the body rot.
Oh.
But people are beginning to wonder, where is he? Where is he? So they start looking for him, and they find his body in the woods. They arrest Busby for his murder. And in 1702, Busby was found guilty of his murder. He was hung from a gibbet, which is that post that hangs out, you see in a lot of buildings. And then they dripped his body after he was dead in tar, and they hung it back up. Okay, so everybody could see him.
No feathers, huh? Just her.
Yeah, just her. So everybody could see him for, I'm not sure how long he was swinging there. And you could see from across the inn, you could see it because it was. So they named the inn the Busby Stoop Inn until 2012 when it was closed. And I don't know if it's been renamed yet.
Oh.
Busby's last wish was to sit in the chair at the inn and have one last drink. So as he's sitting in the chair, he puts a curse on the chair, and anyone who sits in his chair shall die very soon afterwards. So it's said that Busby's ghost haunts the inn and the area around the inn and the stoop where he was hung at. You can often see a shadow figure hanging out there. So it's said that 60 deaths are attributed to the chair. The first to be connected to the chair is a chimney sweep who got drunk while he was sitting in the chair with a friend, and that was in 1894. He left the inn very, very drunk and supposedly fell asleep in the middle of the road where his friend left him. In the morning, he was found hung on the same gibbet that Busby was hung at. So the townspeople claimed it was a suicide, that he went up there and did it to himself.
Okay.
20 years later, the friend who is dying admitted to robbing and killing the chimney sweep.
There you go.
So, and then during World War II, many airmen would drink at the inn and would challenge each other to sit in the chair. And those that actually sat in the chair didn't return from their missions.
Really?
So, yeah. Two airmen in 1968 were challenging each other to sit in Busby chair. They both did. And later that night, their car ran off the road and hit a tree. Neither one made it. I should also say that a lot of people claimed when they sat in the chair that it was just so comfortable before they left the inn. That they all just thought it was like the best chair. So others who seemed to die after encountering the chair was a maid who accidentally bumped the chair while she was cleaning, and she died soon after of a brain tumor. A number of motorists on bike trips at different times throughout the years all had fatal accidents after sitting in the chair. A hitchhiker was struck and killed by a car. A local man had a heart attack after sitting in Busby's chair. Why a local would sit in there after all
the
stories is kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
A number of a construction worker was goaded into sitting in the chair, and later he fell through the roof of the building he was working on, and he died.
Yeah.
The owner of the inn decided to put the chair in the cellar. And one day a delivery man comes, sees the chair, sits down, says, "Oh, what a great chair." So he goes upstairs, he talks to the guy, and he says, "Why do you have this chair downstairs? It's so comfy, it should be up here." And the owner's like, "No, it'll never be up here." And the delivery guy leaves, he runs his van off the road and into a tree and was killed. So after this incident, the chair was donated to the Thirsk Museum, where it still hangs to this day. It's hung, like, really high towards the ceiling, so nobody can take it down and sit on it. And so, coincidences or death by chair? You decide.
Death by chair.
That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that is pretty neat. I like the fact that they've suspended it, basically, from the ceiling so that nobody can sit in it. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit in that chair.
Well, you know, I mean, it. You know,
I'll look at it.
It's like we said about the, you know, the whole Zach Baggins thing and the Annabelle doll. You know, it depends how much you believe in this stuff.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
If you believe that you're going to die if you touch the Annabelle doll, then you're probably not going to do it.
Right.
If you don't believe in it, then you're probably going to be like, haha, look at me.
Well, I kind of wonder, because Busby thought the chair was so comfortable and it was his chair, right? Mm, he had a natural attachment to the chair.
Right.
I wonder if there isn't something that goes even farther back attached to the chair. Or maybe the wood that it came from, you know, maybe a witch was buried under the tree or, you know, just...
You never know.
You never
That's
know.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you know, it does make me wonder... You know, where it, now that you mention it, you know, where it originated.
Yeah.
You know, like, who made it. And
that's something we're never going to know, but still cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and that's kind of like all the newspaper reports about the Stratford knockings.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the newspapers had a field day with this. I couldn't find one article about it.
Seriously?
Like, not one. And I searched, like, exhaustively to try to find just one measly article about Phelps and his family and the knockings, and nothing.
Wow.
It was mentioned in a book, but I never found any newspaper accounts of it.
Weird.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Makes you wonder. Things make you go,
Sure do.
Yeah.
Sure do. Man. So what do you got going on this next week?
This next week I have, I have work. I have my data entry job and my, I have the driver's ed job the following week.
Okay.
So I've got two classes, so I'll work 5 to 9, teaching 2 2-hour classes.
Okay.
So I'll do that for 1 week, and then the third week, when we come back here and do another episode, I'll have to do the South Milwaukee class. But yeah, just basically the data entry job and the driver's ed stuff.
Okay.
And then I have to make something like 8 dozen cookies for my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Because they have like a cookie walk or something at their church.
Okay.
And apparently I make some bangin' sugar cookies.
All right.
So, yeah, and I get to decorate them this year.
Good. You usually don't.
Which, no, I usually just give them to them plain, and then, you know, the kids decorate them, you know, do whatever. So later today I have to run out to Meijer and get me some of those little, decorative pearls.
Oh, fun.
You know, I want to get some of those to use as, like, little bulbs on the Christmas trees.
Yeah. Aw.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm going to stick to blue and silver.
Okay.
And do the little bulbs, you know, little pearls.
It's
and,
easier to stick to just a few colors.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think I'll probably do maybe some snowmen.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
A couple of wreaths, some trees.
Do you have your own sugar cookie recipe?
No, actually. The recipe that I use... got 5 stars on, I believe it's allrecipes.com.
That's my favorite one. That's my favorite go-to for recipes.
But it's, like, called, like, Grandma's Sugar Cookies or something. Okay. Grandma's Best Sugar Cookies or something like that.
Okay.
I have it printed off and stuffed in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
But I have to find it, or I need to Google it and find it. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. They just always, they turn out really, like, light and buttery and flaky and...
That's the way they should
just
be.
Just delicious, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, boy, are you making me hungry today.
Well, it's almost lunchtime, so we should probably cut it off so that we can, you know, go eat some fucking food.
Yeah. I agree.
Before we become delirious.
Yes.
With hunger.
All right.
So we're good for this week?
We're good for this week.
We're good for this week. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to us. We really appreciate it. Please, please, please take some time. Go to iTunes. Leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. We'd really appreciate it. If you have any stories about haunted happenings, folklore in your culture, please send those our way. Send those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. So from me, Janine Mercer, everybody have a great couple of weeks, and we'll be back.
And from me, Mimi Steven, peace out.
Peace out. And as always, stay spooky.
Well, I may be killed on the ocean. People, I may be killed by a cannonball. I'll tell you one thing that's for some good people. I'm out of that gal, be the cause of it all. So when I die, I want to be laid out in the finals. I want a black sport coat and a Stetson hat. I want a $20 gold piece on my watch chain. So the boys will know that I died standing pat. I went down to St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long white table.